Hello, and welcome to this week's Behind the Headlines podcast. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Well, since this is our first podcast, I should explain to you what we're aiming for. Our reporters bring you the best in entertainment and information daily. We want to give you some insider access into those stories. Every week, reporters from different desks will join me to talk about some of the biggest headlines they've covered, and we hope you enjoy their insights. For our first segment, I talked to Watchdog reporter Raquel Rutledge. She's written a follow-up piece about the chemical diacetyl. The chemical is used in various food products and e-cigarettes to create a buttery taste. However, the fumes from diacetyl are potentially fatal. Federal regulators are aware of this, but they have yet to regulate the substance. Raquel wrote about this in February in her Gasping for Action Watchdog report. She focused on a group of coffee workers in Texas for that story. Earlier this week, she talked to me about the latest with this investigation.
Well, after the Texas coffee workers, we found them, and there were five of them, they really blamed their illnesses, they thought, on the flavoring additive, diacetyl being added, a synthetic version, to make hazelnut coffee, and it's something that's added to food to give that buttery flavor. What was not really known widely is that diacetyl also occurs naturally in coffee roasting. Now, scientists have written about it in obscure publications, and it's been known a little bit about it being a byproduct of roasting coffee, but nobody has ever really measured the concentrations of the workforce and what they're exposed to in all of these coffee roasting facilities, be it cafes that do their own small amounts of roasting, et cetera. So we approached a number of places around southeastern Wisconsin and asked them if we could have access to their plant and just test the air. They hadn't heard that diacetyl was a problem in their business because they, like a lot of folks, thought, oh, we don't use flavors. It's not a problem for us. It's all fine. That's only for the additives. And they didn't realize that it actually comes off of when you roast. It's basically the sugars and the amino acids interact and create diacetyl right there. And it comes off the roasters, and it comes off when you grind coffee. That increases the surface area, and so you get a lot more exposure from grinding. So a lot of folks were reluctant to let us come into their plants. A couple of folks understood the importance of it and let us in there, and we were able to hire an industrial hygienist to come in and collect the samples properly. And so we did that for two in southeastern Wisconsin, one in Madison and one here in Milwaukee. Let us come in and do some testing, and we did that. And what we found was that their levels were higher than what the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is recommending are safe levels of exposure. And these were places that were clean, airy, they were trying to do the right thing, state-of-the-art type places. These are not, places that where it looked like you had people being, crammed in dark rooms, with smoke coming out of everywhere. You couldn't smell anything in there. You would never have suspected that there would be an issue there.
What are the two places who gave you that access?
A place in Madison called Just Coffee Cooperative, and then a place here in Milwaukee called Valentine Coffee.
How did you convince the two coffee roasteries who did talk to you to give you access to their shops?
Yeah, well, Just Coffee in Madison, they are, their whole motto of the way they work is, the reason they got into business in the first place is because they were worried about farmers in Mexico being exploited, and they wanted to do the right thing. So they're really folks that care about workers and what's going on in the industry and just making sure that things are being done as safely as possible. So I really didn't take a lot of convincing for them. The other folks, along the way, those that kind of weren't excited about it, and Valentine, I so appreciate them letting us in there. I don't think they were as excited about it because there is a fear that they're going to come off looking like, oh my gosh, we don't care about our workers. When, in actuality, the flip is true. If you're, by allowing us in there, I think that speaks volumes about that you do care about your employees because you're willing to tackle this issue if there is one. You're not going to bury your head in the sand and say, oh, it's not a problem when you don't really know. So, I just made a hard case for all of them on, we're not out here to bash businesses or to make people look bad or to create a commotion when there is not a problem. But if we can save people's lungs, if these workers are, young people are exposed to these chemicals, there's two chemicals, basically diacetyl, and then there's a cousin, it's called 2,3-pentanedione, very similar to it. It causes equal destruction to the lungs. If you can you know, prevent folks from coming down with that lung disease that aren't suspecting it. I mean, that's a big public service. That's what got us interested in this in the first place.
So what comes next for this story?
We are going to do some medical testing on some of the roasters and see what that looks like. You have to have knowledgeable folks doing it. These lung diseases that result from diacetyl are often misdiagnosed as asthma, COPD. Doctors aren't asking the questions about where people work and what they're exposed to. So they're often overlooked. So we're going to just take a little look at that.
There are actions coffee roasteries can take to ensure the safety of their workers. Manufacturers can consult with ventilation engineers. They can enclose grinding and packaging machines. For more safety tips and additional information, pick up Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can also find that information online at jsonline.com/watchdog. Moving on to lighter news, the big gig starts soon. Summerfest fans can look forward to big names such as Carrie Underwood, Stevie Wonder, and more. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's music writer Piet Levy came out with his list of 33 must-see acts. For each day of the festival, he highlights a headliner, an emerging artist, and a local band you should check out. But who's Piet's absolute must-see band for Summerfest?
Ladies and gentlemen, on the first night of their American tour, will you please welcome the Rolling Stones?
Really, the absolute must-see band is the Rolling Stones, which wasn't on this list. But the Rolling Stones, back there playing Summerfest, it really is, you know, one of the best gets, if not the best get, that the Summerfest has ever had. But, you know, that show sold out, like, within 7 minutes after the tickets went on sale. And if you want to see it, you either have a ticket and you spend a lot of money on it, or you have to spend a ton of money on it through StubHub. But the consolation is that there's hundreds and hundreds of other bands to check out.
Who would you suggest?
So on opening day, I really like Mavis Staples, who's a kind of a legendary soul and gospel singer who, you know, her music with the Staples Singers, which included her father, the late Pop Staples, it really was the soundtrack for the civil rights movement. And she's getting kind of renewed interest now. Jeff Tweedy produced some of her more recent albums, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco. Another headliner that I'm really looking forward to and excited about would be the New Pornographers, which is a Canadian power pop band. It's kind of a super group. You've got Nico Cases in there, who's gone on to do some really big things, and Dan Behar from Destroyer. AC Newman is the singer-songwriter kind of leading that group.
So who would be some of your returning favorites at Summerfest this year?
Well, you know, what I love about Summerfest, and you don't get this at a lot of other music festivals, is, you know, there are plenty of opportunities for local artists to play, and local artists play year after year after year. And there are a lot of exceptional local artists who can tend to get overlooked. They can tend to get overshadowed by the headliners. But it's great to see that Summerfest will put them in some good spots. So, for instance, Webster X, who I'm pretty sure has played Summerfest.
Paul, my aunt's young routine, Pastor Biff, or Pastor, daily questions and routine of thing, need to dream.
He's a rising rapper who, you know, he's just really interesting. He's got a very passionate local fan base. And he was given a slot opening for Lupe Fiasco on the Miller Lite Oasis stage on July 3rd. And you've also got the Fatty Acids, which has played Summerfest before for sure. That's a local kind of DIY psychedelic rock group that is really inspired by the Flaming Lips. And what's great about their set at Summerfest this year, the Fatty Acids, is they're opening for the Flaming Lips. We've also got a band called Gold, which is becoming one of the most popular bands in Milwaukee, synth pop group that's playing at the Emerging Artist Series on June 26th, which is a special series at the U.S. Cellular Connection stage. And that band just, it deserves it because it's just a really catchy, fun band.
Piet and our other music writers hosted a Summerfest show earlier this week. The show covered everything from new food and drinks at Summerfest, headliner highlights, and viewers' questions. For that and more, head over to jsonline.com/summerfest. Now, coming up at the end of the show, we're hearing from Packers beat writers Tyler Dunn and Bob McGinn. The two will hash out some of their thoughts on Packers minicamp. But first, a look at some of the biggest business headlines this week. During Scott Walker's first term as governor, Wisconsin ranked 35th overall in the nation in private sector job creation. New government statistics from 2011 through 2014 showed the United States posting a 9.3% total gain. Wisconsin, however, posted a gain of 5.7%. The numbers put Wisconsin behind its Midwestern peers. Wisconsin's unemployment rate rose to 4.6% in May. More people were estimated to be unemployed, and fewer said they were looking for work. Economist Brian Jacobson called the report a double whammy. However, it's rare to read too much into one month's data because of potential inaccuracies. The Milwaukee Admirals have been left out in the cold on arena plans. The Bucks owners haven't decided if the new arena should include the ability to host the hockey team. Harris Turer, chief executive officer for the Admirals, said they've had very preliminary discussions about playing at the UW-Milwaukee Panther Arena instead. Turer said he understands it's a business decision for the Bucks. And the first of two Meijer stores in Wisconsin is set to open at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. Analysts said consumers have every reason to be excited about that. All of the ingredients are there for a price war to begin in Wisconsin, driving down the cost of food. Grocery shoppers across Wisconsin could see prices fall somewhere from 2.5% to 5% over time. For more of our business coverage, pick up a copy of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or visit jsonline.com/business. Every Thursday, our political team hosts our JS on Politics show. The show walks viewers through some of the hot-button issues of the week. Of course, the budget has been the biggest issue in the state recently. Here's editor Greg Borowski, reporter Jason Stein, and columnist Daniel Bice with the latest on the budget, including what it could take for a compromise to be reached.
There's still no deal. Has there been any progress in the last week, or are we still just kind of jammed up where we were?
I think the bottom line is there's no deal. There's been some progress. I mean, they've agreed on how much they want to cut borrowing from Governor Scott Walker's budget. But as I always say, until you figure out, you know, who's going to bear the brunt of that cost, then you don't really have a deal. And they're fighting right now over whether southeastern Wisconsin projects like the zoo interchange should just get to keep sailing smoothly forward and all the pain should be felt outstate, or whether southeastern Wisconsin shares in the pain. And it's the squabbling has gotten bad enough that Speaker Robin Voss and the Budget Committee co-chair John Nygren sent out a press release this morning criticizing Republicans in the Senate and Alberta Darling, Senator Alberta Darling, saying she was being disingenuous and misrepresenting the Assembly's position. So it's not going particularly
well. So it's divided government in Madison all over again, right?
It's divided government. There's an old joke in politics that the other party is the opposition, but the other house is the enemy. And, you know, we kind of see that going on right now with the disagreements between the Senate and Assembly.
Yeah, but there's also a lot, bringing in Dan Bice, for the problems in the Senate. We don't have a very thin margin of error for the budget to pass, and a lot of people saying what they want or don't want in that budget to get
sure.
it through.
Two things. One, missing that deadline is not a huge deal. The budget will just keep on going. It used to be a routine thing that every year, every 2 years, we would miss the budget.
It sounds better if we have a little tote board.
It does.
Down clock, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's not like Washington where everything shuts down. So that's an important thing. But you're right. The Republicans have no one to blame. They can't turn to the other party because they own everything. It's sort of like Colin Powell's old rule, if you break it, you own it. Here it is. If you win it, you own it. And they own everything. So they basically ended up pointing fingers at each other and trying to blame one another for the problems there.
Yeah. So, Jason, who do you think, I mean, in your mind, is the key person or persons or the committee? What's it going to take to bring this all together? Is it the leadership? Is it a key senator who's holding out? Who holds the cards at this point?
Well, the person that always wields the most power is the governor, and particularly when his party controls the legislature. Right now, though, Governor Walker has been pretty content to just sit back and let Republicans in the legislature sort out their differences. But, you know, given the fact that they are not sorting them out, and we're getting closer and closer to the date that he wants to announce his run for president, it'll be interesting to see if he feels like he needs to come in and really push this thing over the finish line.
It's important to identify what the interests are that are involved here. The governor proposed a budget that was directly targeted to a national audience. Then you have the legislative leaders who are trying to put together a budget for the state. And then you have the local legislators who are focused on getting reelected. And finally, you have the special interests who want whatever they can get out of there. And so there's a tug of war between each of those four things. And the zoo interchange that Jason just mentioned is a case of that. Almost every one of these debates, the Bucks Arena debate is a debate about that. The leadership wants a deal that benefits the state, but the local legislators don't want to push something that their local constituents don't want.
Want to know more about the budget? We've got plenty of coverage online that's available at jsonline.com/politics. And as promised, I'm about to throw it to Tyler Dunn and Bob McGinn. It's worth noting that this audio is from Tyler's last Packers podcast. Tyler has accepted a position in his home state of New York covering the Buffalo Bills. OTAs wrapped up minicamp this week, and Tyler has one player in mind who really stood out.
OTAs wrapped up minicamp this week. Some players standing out. I think that one name that jumps out, Devontae Adams, not a shock. Second-year wide receiver. You've seen this with guys before him. I mean, you have before I've been here, too. I mean, the Greg Jennings of the world, the James Joneses. Jordy Nelson was more of a – took a year three jump. But really, as these guys are in the offense, the longer they're around Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre before him, they just get better and better. And my God, you can see that at practice every day with Nelson kind of nursing that hip. He had hip surgery in the offseason. Rodgers is looking to Adams a ton, said he's got a quote-unquote humongous upside, a potential star. I mean, Adams himself posted a video early in the offseason doing a 360 dunk that is tough for anybody in the NBA to pull off. So, I mean, when you kind of combine that size, athleticism, I mean, his route running, you saw it up close to it at training camp, so smooth in and out of his breaks. Combine that with a knowledge of what in the heck you're doing, and man, I think this is a player you buy stock in right now. What do you think? What's your...
Well, it was a great rookie class of wide receivers, and he was okay last year, and, you know, I've only seen him one practice out there, so I don't know. I'm going to be eager to see him when the pads come on and games start being played.
You know, there were some pretty big moments, too, last year when the quarterback looked to him. You know, Miami, the fake spike. They're on the same page, and he's got the, you know, he knows what to do when he catches the ball. He doesn't go inside where the time could run out. Cortland Finnegan's trying to bait him inside, sticks to the sideline, gets yardage, gets out of bounds. The big game against New England, the big game against Dallas in the postseason where he kind of took Sterling Moore to task, just ate him alive. A lot of big moments now. It wasn't all good. And in the Seattle game, like a lot of players in that game, he had plays that he absolutely is going to regret. Early in the game, I don't know if a lot of people noticed this, but the third down on the one drive, and they had to settle for a field goal. Randall Cobb caught a little pass, you know, near the 1 or 2 yard line. He walks into the end zone if Devontae Adams just crashes down on Earl Thomas a little harder. You know, that's what they want him to do there. They want him to muck it up, get a body on Earl Thomas. Doesn't do it. Cobb's tackled, settle for a field goal. So, I mean, you're going to get those mistakes out of a rookie. There's a stretch when the ball wasn't really even thrown his way at all. But if you're looking for somebody in OTAs and that stood out, it's definitely him, I think.
Okay.
Beyond that, man, you know, Eddie Lacy looks pretty large again, which isn't a shock, but I don't think it really matters. I mean, it seems like every year he's asked about his conditioning and where he's at physically, and he's looking big, but that's probably what the Packers want. He'll run himself into shape and be Eddie Lacy. You know, the quarterback position behind Rodgers, Scott Tolzien's job to lose. He's the number two. I think Matt Blanchard actually looked better than Brett Hundley, the rookie.
The kid out of UCLA. From Whitewater.
Yeah, I mean the rookie Hundley. Yeah, Blanchard is. He had a couple nice throws yesterday on the money. I don't know if he'll be able to leapfrog him. I mean, Hundley was drafted for a reason. But elsewhere, the offensive line's pretty much set. Defensively, the number one storyline out of the spring into the training camp, Clay Matthews. I mean, they're going to move him around again. And I think that was what we didn't really know going into OTAs. I mean, are they just going to put him right back at outside linebacker? They pay him $13-plus million to harass quarterbacks. That's what he does best. But at the same time, I mean, the defense, a big reason that run D turned around, I mean, they were dead last the first half of the season, a top five run defense. The second half was Matthews inside. You had the numbers on it after the year. What, about 26, 27% of the time?
Yeah, I think it was 28, yeah.
28% of the time?
At inside backer, yeah.
So that's going to continue. They made that very clear. He's been working at both spots, and now he has a chance to learn the position.
Well, that does it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up next week, do you know how to develop business in different neighborhoods? Turns out adding bike lanes and making it easier to walk around the neighborhood could help. Business reporter Agno Philip chatted with me about the best example of this in our city.
When I interviewed the urban planner at UWM, he took me on a bike ride using bubbler bikes, and the place he took me to was the Third Ward. And the Third Ward, according to him, has really been able to redevelop in the way it has to this point because it's built at what he called pedestrian scale.
For more on that story and others, check back with us next week.